I think that's how everyone should approach working with the ISDRs. You have to experiment. There is no, rule of thumb on how to build things when you're launching AI outreach. Things are going to fail. Things are going to kick off.
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by The Juice. Our mission is to squeeze out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals to help you push your brand to the forefront of the industry. Let's raise a glass. Welcome back to the Content Cocktail Hour. My name is Jonathan Gandolf, founder and CEO of The Juice, and the host of today's episode of the Content Cocktail Hour, where I'm thrilled to be joined by Alina from AISDR, who leads their marketing team as their head of marketing. This is a really exciting space, a really fast-moving, fast-paced space, so I'm excited to dive into all of that today. But before we do that, Alina, in your own words, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about AISDR?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hey, everyone. Super happy to be here today. I'm not usually doing a lot of podcasts, so I'm really excited. So yeah, I'm leading marketing at AISDR. I've been doing marketing for over 10 years with a strong focus on B2B over the last like 5 years. And at AISDR, I pretty much cover all marketing areas from demand gen to product marketing. So all those good things. Yeah, and just in a nutshell, AISDR is essentially an AISDR software, an AI sales agent that automates sales outreach for clients to kind of put it on rails. It helps prospect, it helps create outreach messages, both for inbound and outbound, and basically takes care of the entire conversation up until the point that the leads convert and book a meeting with the company or take another step in their sales journey. It could be a free trial, it could be an upsell from a free trial to a paid subscription. So multiple scenarios, all powered by generative AI.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us. I like that you're not on a loud podcast. That's what we aim to do here, is get the people like, doing the work that aren't spending all their time on podcasts. So excited to learn from you today. Alina, before we jump into the conversation, this is the Content Cocktail Hour, so we always like asking our guests, what are they enjoying drinking nowadays?
I still have a few hours of work ahead of me, so I have a ginormous cup of tea, and it's really, really cold outside, so I have to keep myself warm. So, yeah.
Well, cheers to that. I'm drinking coffee here. It's morning our time, and it's kind of one of the first mornings where there's this cool, crisp air that we have today, so it's starting to feel like fall here.
Yeah, same here.
You mentioned AISDR. That's literally kind of the name of it's the name of the business. It's also kind of the name of the category or the space that you all are in. This is a space that didn't exist maybe 24 months ago, maybe even less than that. And now it's become a very competitive space. So maybe just explain to us kind of the rise and kind of the velocity of the growth that's happened at AISDR and kind of what that means for you leading marketing there, kind of holding on for dear life or steering the ship. I'm not sure the right analogy, but I'd love to just kind of hear what's top of mind in marketing in this very fast-paced space.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're completely right. About like 24 months ago, there was no such thing as like an AISDR, and it got kickstarted when when GPT-3, ChatGPT was released and everyone just hopped on that train and started building products using that Gen AI kind of language models. And the reason why everyone's super hyped about AISDRs is just the idea of getting done more with less, and the time saving, and just the innovative nature. Like, you don't really have to invest into tedious email personalization. You don't have to dig through people's LinkedIn profiles to find that one post that really makes sense to your pitch. The AI goes ahead and does that for you. So that's kind of like the premise of the popularity of the software. Also, the other thing is that I personally hate sending follow-ups to any messages. I hate, like, when I'm involved in sales, which happens quite a bit, I'm notoriously bad at just sending the follow-up on time. I make notes for myself, and I always just forget to hit that reply button. With the AI, that is also kind of automated so that you don't have pipeline just leaking because of this human lack of attention or whatnot. So those are kind of the things that define, the demand across the audience. And also there's just a lot of hype around like how far are we in the AI realm? Like how complex, how human-like the AI can get. And we keep pushing that frontier, and there is just, you know, genuine curiosity around the things like, okay, so the AI can do this thing. Can we take it further? Like, where is the limit? And so far we haven't reached it, which is a good thing. Yeah, I hope that answered the question.
Yeah, absolutely. It's fascinating. I'm curious, does the SDR team at AI SDR, or is there an SDR team? Are you guys, is it a combination of human and AI powered, or is it just AI at this point?
Well, we're not at the point where we would need an SDR. We're obviously using AI SDR to do our SDR work, but we don't like in no way intend to fully replace the SDR function, and the technology itself is just not there yet. There's so much more that the SDRs can bring to the table. There is no possibility to fully replicate human creativity. The AI is not capable of building like complex multi-level analogies around the data using your data, or like jump to complex assumptions, layering one on top of the other. And that is something only humans can do. But we have a lot of clients who supplement their SDR function with AI SDR, letting them focus on things like, you know, dialing people in, calling them when the time is right, and kind of combining those efforts to get the best performance.
Yeah, I asked the question based on my own previous experience. So the company I was at before The Juice, I was leading marketing, and sales dev reported into marketing. I know there are some people that'll like die on the hill that SDR function should be in sales or SDR function should be in marketing. I'm not like going to fight that battle. I do think there are some unique advantages to SDRs reporting into marketing in terms of messaging consistency, brand voice consistency, campaign execution. Yeah. So I'm curious, how are you seeing marketing teams use AI SDR for some of the things that you maybe kind of referenced earlier, like event follow-up or account-based marketing campaigns? How are marketers using AI SDR?
Yeah, we actually do have quite a bit, and not just marketers, who are in charge of the SDR teams. And, you know, circling back on what you just said, at my previous company, we had the SDR team, you know, being bounced back and forth between sales and marketing. So I'm very familiar with that. One day they'll be on our calls, the other day they'll be, you know, reporting to someone else.
Yeah.
Since there's a lot of possibility, not just with AI SDR as a brand, but just, you know, with the whole concept. Marketers, such as myself, we use AI SDR to nurture the leads. For instance, one of my best performing workflows on the website so far is when someone fills the form and then they're automatically enrolled into an AI SDR outreach cadence. And since we know where they're coming from, we know what their journey looked like, because we can process the CRM data, we can see all those activity touch points, we can make the message like really, really relevant to their previous journey and fast track them to the next step through building a more personalized, meaningful connection with them, knowing a lot more about their background, about their demographic, firmographic, technographic data that is all packaged into the software. And then I'm experimenting with doing my PR campaigns through AI SDR. We're experimenting with some of the SEO outreach through AI SDR and things like webinar invites, when you want to make them really personal and capitalize on, you know, on the value of the video and the upcoming discussion specifically for each person, knowing what they're talking about, you know, on LinkedIn and other social profiles. It just not just increases the conversion, it just shows like you really know who you're talking to, although technically you don't. But, you know, having all that data, it just helps not marketing better understand who people are, you know, that are getting engaged with them, but also to handing that discussion over to sales, it helps them to kind of, you know, layer their narrative around more data, which is personally, I just think it's really handy. And having that in this streamlined conversational format, that's just a goldmine of information.
My wheels are spinning as we're sitting here. You're referencing some of the use cases. I hinted at a few, but there's so many different use cases that you could apply this to. How do you balance kind of doubling down on what is working and experimenting with all these new use cases? What's that balance like for you?
For the most part, I have some of the campaigns that I have running at AI SDR that are evergreen, and that just comes through a lot of iteration. I experimented with messaging, I experimented, you know, with the format, with the length, And really, you just look at the data, like how many people are opening those emails, how many people are engaging with them, are replying to them, and you see what's working and what's not. And plus, there is always a sentiment coming from the replies. And the good thing about the AI is that it teaches itself as it goes based on the data it has. So you just have to nudge it into the right direction and it's going to scale what's working. So I have a few of those campaigns that are just always on. And then I have a handful of campaigns that I'm launching and that are messing up my overall data completely because they're never hitting anything. But I think that's how everyone should approach working with the ISDRs. You have to experiment. There is no, rule of thumb on how to build things when you're launching AI outreach. Things are going to fail. Things are going to kick off.
It feels like if you're not failing, you're probably not trying enough experiments or maybe pushing the technology far enough. Feels like there should be some appetite for failure built in to those experiments.
Absolutely.
So I think that's good.
If you're not failing, you're not learning.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I love that. Okay, so I'm going to switch gears just a little bit to kind of how you lead marketing at AISDR and less about the space. But it's a very noisy space, very fast-paced space. It's a very competitive space from my understanding as well. So how do you think about your own content marketing strategy in a space that is so competitive? How do you try to break through the noise with the content you are creating?
Well, the first thing that I did when launching AISDR about a year ago, even before I joined the team, I was just advising the founders on what to do first things first. And content was the first thing that, we started doing, even when I was not there. I said, okay, we need to, invest into inbound. We need to start writing blogs. We need to start educating people around what this technology is and what it's capable of. Because what I've seen over the last year is that products like AISDR, we're creating the market. We're creating the demand. You look at the search volumes, they've tripled over the last few months. And, that's because we're kind of like pushing the industry forward. And we're kind of shooting ourselves in the foot by doing that because everyone is doing that.
Yeah.
So in terms of cutting through the noise, apart from being one of the first ones who, hopped on the train of creating content around the topic in the first place, I've had my team change their approach toward content creation. So before, the basic structure of the content was that there has to be some intro that sets the scene, grabs the attention, then the main part that kind of delivers the value, and then the conclusion that no one really reads. So what we did is we stripped our content of all the fluff that was in it, and we're cutting straight to the chase. We're trying to make it bite-sized. We're trying to make it as actionable as possible because people's attention spans are so short and there is so much, like you said, there's so much noise. There's so much competition, not just between the brands, but just, other companies battling for people's attention spans. So it has to be engaging for the person to either read at least a half of your content, which I personally think is a great achievement, or scroll through, find something that they find valuable and leave, feeling content that this was something that they really like, some value that they really picked up. And then I have my team just completely change the tone of voice. So we're writing the way we're talking. There is no jargon. There is no corporate BS. And I'm being very, very bad cop, when it comes to checking the content. And I'm like, okay, if you say this, if you read this out loud, does it roll off your tongue? And if by any chance it doesn't, like, you just let go of this. You have to change this. Because people read the way they think and they want to read the way they think. And, you don't have to overwhelm them with, complexities. Like if they want to read an academic paper, they're going to go and read an academic paper. Don't make your blog academic. So yeah, that's the other thing. And then I really like introducing a lot of vulnerability into the content. And when most brands, and this is like traditional marketing, brands love to brag about their wins, brands love to brag about their achievements, but they kind of downplay the failures that they might have. And this makes them, better looking in the spotlight on, on the global market, but this makes them impersonal. And by admitting that, okay, this is where we failed, these are some of the cases that we thought are going to work, but they never did, it makes it more believable, more relatable. And people are just feeling more genuine towards you. So we're adding that note of vulnerability into our content. The other thing is that I try to make sure that every bit of the content that we're writing, regardless of what it is, it's a blog, it's a guide, it's whatever, it should add value. I'm super value driven. And if I see that the specific blog is just a bunch of clutter, you have to detach yourself from it. You have to let it go, because every sentence should take your reader towards accomplishing the goal that they came for. And I say reader, it could be viewer, it could be listener, whatever kind of content that, you know, you're working with.
I love that. I love, you called it bad cop, but I think editing is so, I had a former boss who, former manager, who he really took great pride in his ability to edit. And that kind of like flipped my perspective on it of like, you know, I think we as humans, we see people cut things out when they're editing and we think it's like a subtraction exercise, but really good editing is additive. It's helping your reader. Yeah. It's additive for the reader, right? It's helping them get what they need to get out of what they're reading. So I like that you're kind of forcing your team on that and you're embracing that role of bad cop, yeah, as you call it. We'll call it good editor, bad cop, whatever you want to call it. I think that's cool. And I love the vulnerability. That's a cool perspective on content. I think you're right. Like, we talk about learning a lot from failures, but I think to build it into your content strategy is unique and takes some bravery, especially in a competitive space, to talk about your failures. But it's going to build that connection with your audience in a way that's so much more powerful and so much more authentic, which you mentioned content strategy as well. So kudos to you and the team on building all of that into the content strategy. That's really cool to hear.
Yeah. And you just made me remember how my previous boss, when I just entered the marketing space, actually taught me, you know, to edit my own work. And, you know, he led by example. And this is something that I picked up from him that I do with my team every so often, is when I just take the piece of content that they wrote or, you know, otherwise created, I highlight some of the bits and then I go to them and ask them like, okay, here's the bit I highlighted. Tell me what I don't like about it.
Mm.
And then it gets them to think that there's definitely something wrong. And the analytical thinking comes into play and people are just like bouncing ideas. And what you get as a result is a really crisp, very to the point piece that, you know, otherwise people would be wrecking their brains around.
Yeah, that's really cool. We got two customers, actually, one, the content studio, and two, Erica Schneider, who some of their product offering is editing as it comes to content. I just think that's like, it's so powerful. They've really educated me and educated us on the power of editing. So very cool. I will champion that as a real strong skill on any content team. What's one unpopular opinion that you have as it pertains to B2B marketing?
I have quite a bit of those. So I guess the most provocative one, I don't own this. I came across this. It got me thinking. And I ended up thinking that, yes, I completely agree with that, is that B2B marketing as is, it doesn't exist anymore. There is B2H marketing. It's not business to business, business to humans, because at the end of the day, yes, you're selling to a business and it's a business who's buying from you, but it's a human who's championing the purchase process. It's a human who is behind the decision. You know, in appealing to them, you have to inspire them to want to buy from you. And, you know, you cannot do this by addressing them as a part of the business. You have to like personally build out this connection. And I guess, you know, circling back to AISDRs, that's what something that products like ours empower people to do, you know, reach businesses through people. So that's, you know, that's kind of like one thing. And the other thing bound to that is that with B2B marketing, I always like to say that in the common, you know, in the current space, it's like dating. You either swipe right and you click right away, you either get ghosted and, you know, you just shout to people, they never reply, or you get rejected. And whatever of the bad scenarios you come across, if you get ghosted or rejected, people are going to tell you that it's not, you know, it's not you, it's me, but it's always you. So you have to be creative, you have to be personal, you have to be empathetic and emotional when reaching to them.
Be the H. I'm going to steal that. I think you're right. You know, the buying process is different, but the human who is buying our MarTech, our sales tech software, is the same human who maybe at night is sitting on their couch being influenced by influencers on Instagram, right? Like, it's the same person. So like, the buyer behavior is very similar. The process is different. And obviously the person is the identical person. So I'm going to steal that B-8. I think that's really good. I'll give you credit. That's for sure. Typically, that is our last question, but I'm going to ask maybe a follow-up here, given what AI SDR does and some of what you've said today. If somebody is interested in starting to experiment with this technology, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, I guess the best way is to have the target audience in mind. You know, have the idea of who do you want to target, have some sort of like value props outlined, and yeah, and then just have open mind to see what the AI can do for you. You know, it's really like the entry curve, the entry level into the technology is not steep at all. You don't need a lot to start using AI SDRs, but you have to kind of like align the expectations with reality, because people think that the AI is going to work magic on their sales. It will eventually, but it takes a lot of training and iteration. And the more, you know, the better the idea around your product and about around your target audience you bring into the onboarding process, the better results you can expect from the beginning. So I guess, yeah, that those are the main things. And then just treat it as, you know, as a tool. Don't treat it as a team member, because it cannot think as a separate team member, but treat it as a tool that's going to make you a better team member and a better worker for the company that you're with. So
I love that. I know this wasn't the intent, but I'm going to pull it out anyway. The theme of this conversation, you mentioned earlier on, like being okay with failure. You mentioned in your own content strategy, the vulnerability. You just said like the open-mindedness to approach that. And I think that's so powerful that like, you know, it's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be, especially the first time you do it on all of this, just jump in and have an open-mindedness, be vulnerable and, you know, expect some failure. And I think that'll go a long way. So I really appreciate that perspective. That's reminder for myself, as well as for our listeners of the podcast too, I hope. Alina, if people want to learn more about AI SDR specifically or learn more from you, what's the best way to do that?
You can follow me on LinkedIn. You can always find me. I can drop a link with you, you know, just because there's no way, like I said, there's no way to pronounce my last name. So I'm not going to nudge people towards trying to find me by watching this. But for AI SDR, you can always just visit AISDR.com. We've been very straightforward with the name. Actually, if you don't mind, can I tell us like a short story around the AISDR name? Yeah, this is my favorite story. And this is something that went viral recently. So, you know, we have the name AISDR.com. It's pretty descriptive. And we have one of our competitors, I'm not going to name drop, but one of our competitors did a billboard in San Francisco right next to the highway, ginormous one that says hire AI space SDR. And they had like their brand name somewhere in the corner and people kept driving by. What they stopped their eyesight on was AISDR. So they went ahead and searched, they entered AISDR. Well, long story short, we ended up closing a few deals by people seeing that ad and coming to us instead of the competitors.
That's awesome. I know exactly the competitor you're talking about. And that is hilarious. I love that. I'm going to talk to our editor too. I want to see if we can get that story at the start of this, because that's such a cool story. That's awesome. And another kind of story behind the scenes here, Alina did, you know, before we hit record, I asked everybody, make sure I pronounce their name appropriately. And Alina said, don't even try with her last name. So it's Alina and it starts with a K and she's at AISDR. We'll have the LinkedIn link directly in the show notes here. We'll have a link to the real AISDR in the show notes here. And Alina, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for sharing your perspective on all things AISDR, all things content. I really appreciate the perspective. To all of our watchers and listeners of the podcast, thank you for joining another episode. Until next time, cheers.
Thank you so much, Jonathan.
Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by The Juice. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us on app.thejuicehq.com. See you next time. Same time, same place. Cheers.